Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, West Stringfellow. He has spent much of his career in high-ranking product positions like Amazon in the early days, Visa doing innovation, PayPal as a senior director of product, Rosetta Stone, Target as a VP, a bunch of other places. He's also the recipient of the Products That Count Award. And today he is founder and CEO of Howdo, helping Fortune 500s, startups, and governments use AI to elevate. West, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start off talking about where you today see Howdo fitting into the ecosystem of people innovating and building tech.
Yeah, so I hopefully foundationally, look, I think this is one of the most interesting times to try to build technology, if not the most in the history of human. The technology has never been easier to do, but at the same time, in my opinion, that means it's kind of harder to do. When everyone can build anything, what to build becomes the question, and judgment rises to the top of that equation. So the people, the builders with the right judgment are the ones that will be successful. So my goal with Howdo has always been to try to help every American learn how to build a company with technology. When I was at Target acquired my company just over a decade ago. And when I joined, I became the VP of innovation. And while I was VP of innovation at Target and leading my company, I built a Techstars startup accelerator. And so I was managing kind of three stages of capital. Target was over $70 billion in sales. My startup had around $16 million in funding. And then the average funding for a Techstars startup was, you know, $500,000. And looking at those three enormous gaps in capital, we were all asking the same question. Who is our competitor? Who's our customer? What should we be building to grow our product, to grow our business in the context of the competition with available technology? And looking at that, I realized that the capital might be different and the foundation therefore might be different, but the question is the same and the discipline is the same. And so I started to try to build a machine learning model that would use rigorous discipline and due diligence that I had been employing my entire career to assess opportunities, build teams, build technology, and grow companies. And I spent like 7 years trying to do that. And then ultimately, when GPT 3.5 launched, I realized like I'd been doing reinforcement learning, basic natural language processing and natural language generation. That was next level stuff. I mean, hyperscaling LLMs was never on my radar. Spending $3 million on a foundation model was never even a thought. And so, you know, I realized, okay, game over. And I open sourced the machine learning model training. And that actually became a really popular course, which was the foundation for Howdo's next evolution, which is what it is right now. And then what I've been doing recently is trying to adapt all of the machine learning model training that we created for human readability. We've done that. About 400,000 people have used it. And now I'm adapting it even again, contextually to be used by AI. So previously, it was a really long process you'd have to follow manually. Now it's a very short process, largely driven by AI. And the goal is to try to transform the way people build businesses. Right now, most businesses fail at innovation and fail at transformation. So the statistics coming out of Harvard, around 93% of new products fail. The statistics from McKinsey is around 73% of transformations fail. SBA says around 50% of new businesses fail. That's a lot of failure. When you add it up, it's a couple trillion dollars a year that we spend on businesses and outcomes that don't go anywhere. And when we look at what's happening with AI, we're automating a lot of businesses. And so, you know, right now is the time to start to use this technology to reduce the failure rate, drive business growth, because that's actually what's going to create real jobs, which is going to stabilize our economy. So my goal is to get this information to as many American hearts and minds as possible so that we can grow our economy.
So let's unpack that problem a little bit. You started off talking about how there's sort of this ultra democratization of the ability to build software that's never been there. Like
that's right.
80s, it was an incredibly specialized skill. 90s, 2000s, you had to be pretty educated in the right way to do it. Even 10 years ago, that was the case. But now folks can just sort of vibe code anything that looks complete and kind of seems complete until you start using it. So what are some of the pitfalls that people are running into when they're trying to just jump to the, hey, I can create software now. I can do something that normally would take 18 months before we have a reasonable go live, but now I can do it in 3 weeks or so. With all of those shortcuts, help us unpack what are the real things that often go wrong.
People, if we look at businesses or products that fail to find product market fit, which is when the product actually works with the market, the customer wants it and it grows, it's generally because there's no demand, or there's already a good alternative or competition, or the person who built it didn't fully understand the costs of running it, scaling it, diversifying the product line. A lot of that work, it used to be very expensive to do. For context, you know, at Target, some of the strategies that we built were north of $1 million just to answer all those questions before we put money in. Because for a business like Target, when they put money in, it's in the tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars if they're going to move in any direction. So they spend the time to really do the due diligence, ask the right questions of the customer, of the competition, of themselves even. Can we as a company, do we have the right culture? Do we have the right team? Do we have the right technology? Can we put those things together in a way that builds the right solution for our customer? Is that solution going to be something that will remain relevant to the customer over time? If yes, then what are our competitors going to do? Let's game that out. All of that used to take a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of really specialized people and data. Now with LLMs, I can do that in a day by myself, just talking to LLMs, getting the data, running through the same processes, but using the LLM instead of a very expensive consultancy.
So I want to pick your brain on that before I continue, because I'm torn on that. So I use LLMs a lot. They help me with all kinds of things, writing, brainstorming. I mean, I think anyone who's trying to be productive nowadays, you're using LLMs, and they've changed the way you work, like for fundamentally. Sure. And I, you know, you can get lots of answers from LLMs. The part that I worry about, and maybe you can kind of help me on this one, is I could create a marketing report that I can pick up. You know, maybe I generate it with an LLM, spend about 3 hours on it or something, and end up with a report that looks like it's something you would have bought from a consultancy for, you know, $1 million, 15 years ago.
Right.
But how correct is it? Because it's not doing research. It's not talking to people. It's not showing up at offices. It's not doing, ride-alongs, sit-alongs, I know, you know, you're nodding, and I know you wouldn't say that it replaces all that, obviously, but it is confident. And we've all had that situation with LLMs where it confidently tells you something, right? And you're like, well, wait a minute, that's not true, is it? Because X, Y, and Z. And it says, you're absolutely right. Good catch. And I was like, well, no, you said it so confidently. So on the marketing research side first, how much can we trust the LLMs, and what should our process look like?
It's a great question. And I think it's the most relevant question right now. For everyone. So there are two answers, and one is technical, and I'll be super brief there, and the other is just more process. So technically, I think a lot of people might find what I'm about to say provocative, and I'm not being intentionally so. Technically, LLMs are non-deterministic. Like literally, they are the next best token guess. Like the guess that they make depends upon the tuning, how they're allowed to guess. Do they have to go with the statistically most probable next best token, or are they allowed to have some variance therein? And is that variance extreme, and what kind of tone or timbre does it take? So, you know, in and of itself, the technology is not designed to do 2 + 2 = 4. It's designed to do what should the next syllable of this word be? And because those are different systems, technically, LLMs will not produce the same result consistently unless they are tuned to do so. And then when they are tuned to produce the same result consistently, what we find is that a lot of times, if you were to your point, ask it a question like, is that right? It'll say, oh, you're right, it's not right. So, you know, that the non-determinism is a really important point. And that leads to my second topic, which is the process that we employ. So you're 100% right. If we rely on LLMs for our market research, for understanding our customer, we are going to be relying on the wrong data. We need to still go out and talk to the customer. We need to still think about what the customer said. We can't rely on the LLM to even interpret everything the customer said. We still have to use our brains. We're still the driver. Our judgment still matters. Where I find LLMs extremely helpful is helping me prepare to talk to the customer, maybe even writing the questions, practicing what I'm going to say to the customer. I find especially product managers who are excited about their product and maybe founders who are excited about their product, they tend to talk at the customer as opposed to listening to the customer. So practicing that before going and talking to the customer. And then I also find that a lot of folks tend to run at the market if they're generally intentionally polar here, but you know, generally there are folks who don't like talking to people and there are folks who do. Folks who don't would prefer to sit behind the LLM and talk to that. Folks who do tend to run into market and ignore the LLM. And those are extremes, but let's go with them. On the extreme run into market, a lot of people aren't prepared. They go talk to the customer and they have their idea in their mind and they don't know what the customer might be thinking about alternatives. They don't know about the past history of the sector. They haven't reviewed previous competitors that may have come and gone or previous attempts that may have come and gone. And so I find a lot of that kind of contextual awareness can be radically accelerated with LLMs, but it still requires human judgment. The human in the loop will not go away. In my opinion, this might be controversial, but the human in the loop will not go away for quite a while. And I think a huge part of that has to do with the fact that most businesses don't have robust data. They don't have robust processes. And so they don't have the inputs to make the LLMs deterministic. And they don't have a set of data that they could compare an LLM output to determine right or wrong at a systemic level. So if I was to build a database, you know, is this right or wrong? I would need the data in the database for the database to determine right or wrong. LLMs don't have that data. We got to put it in. So garbage in, garbage out is still true in this paradigm. And the better we can get, the higher the signal that we can get from our customers, the better the output we're going to get from the LLM.
And so ultimately, you're helping your clients get their stuff together, right?
Yes.
Is that correct? And so give me an example of maybe just sort of an example, you could even make up a name or whatever, of a starting point, you know, of the struggle, and then an engagement with your team and sort of how that outcome looks different.
Yeah. So a lot of businesses are generally trying to figure out everything right now. So the way I'm looking at LLMs is, you know, I've gone through multiple generations of technology in my career, from when email first came out to when, you know, email went from a software application to it lives in the browser to it's on a BlackBerry device to it's on a mobile device. You know, every time it goes through one of those form factor evolutions, we're just like, oh, okay, it's email. Now here it is. I'll do the same thing that I did on the computer in a browser, on a browser, on a phone, etc. This is not one of those. This is not Excel being like Google Sheets versus Microsoft Excel. This is a fundamental shift in how we think and relate in the context of technology. You know, I have to work differently with technology, and that means I have to have a different set of behaviors, a different, you know, mindset. The culture of the team has to change a bit. And what really has to shift is the processes and data collection of the organization. If we look at the history of kind of big technical impacts, you know, there was a time before computers and there were computers. Computers went to the cloud, big data happened. Along the way, there were enterprise resource planning, ERP or Salesforce automation. All these systems came in. Every one of those technical changes required one simple thing: get the data into the machine. If you get the data into the machine can do its job. And if you look at the history of technical evolution, most companies have never completed their SFA or their ERP or their cloud migration or their, you know, whatever it may be. We have a something around 70% of companies have never fully completed that. And so when you add LLM to this mix, what you're doing is adding a non-deterministic technology to an incomplete data set on a culture and company that is not primed for being very precise with their data and very methodical with their data collection and judgment as it relates to what the system is telling them. So for example, if Salesforce today said, hey, it's February 26th, you need to follow up with client A. Most people don't think to themselves, do I need to do that? Should I argue with the computer right now? They think, all right, I'll follow up with client A. But with an LLM, it says, hey, you should follow up with client A. And you might need to be like, I don't agree with you. You know, I think that I shouldn't. And the LLM would go, hey, you know what? You're right. So that, So to get the LLM to the point where it's actually going to produce a comprehensive or even coherent response, it needs to have that input. That input's not going to come from anything other than humans putting it into the technology. And that's going to come from all the systems that should have been collecting the data, but haven't been since we put computers in offices.
So let's double click on that, the data gathering part of things, because this is kind of two different questions on my mind right now is how do we handle that pulling in of the data, sort of that analytics world of, you know, make sure you're sensing the right things. I'll hold off on my second question, which deals with some of the AI transformation stuff. But let's go to that first one first. What do you see as the main things to be accomplished, the challenges? How do you look at that initial problem? Because you're right, if it's garbage in, garbage out, it's never been just generally solved across the board where everyone does a really great job of collecting the right data and processing it in the right way. So how do you think about that?
I think about it contextually. I think there are some companies that are ready for it. Their team, their technology, their culture, they're hungry. You've got people who are builders. You got people who are doers. You got people who are mathematically minded, data minded. You know, those kind of companies, it's about giving them structure, about helping them understand the discipline, and then ultimately just helping them understand how to capture data and employ the tools. But for that's a very small subset of companies. The vast majority of companies are folks who, you know, a huge percentage of the team is marketing and sales and, you know, disciplines that are inherently non-technical and more relationship-based. You know, that's where we're seeing a lot of the automation. You know, we're seeing a lot of the potential for the language models to be interrupting the communication patterns that are currently happening, or augmenting and accelerating the communication patterns that are already happening in the business. And those teams may not be culturally kind of comfortable using technology as a reference point. And so in those teams, it's much more about soft skills. It's much more about helping people have a growth mindset, helping people feel comfortable using data to lead their decisions, helping people feel comfortable, candidly, continuously learning. One of the most challenging things about AI, and this will be true probably for at least a decade to come, is that what is true today may not be true next week. And so for you know, like Salesforce, I'm not picking on Salesforce, great company, great product, but I'm just going to use them as an example here. In the history of Salesforce, you didn't have weekly product changes that significantly changed the capability of the software. Now, you would have new product releases, and those would be correlated with training. Those would be correlated with a structured rollout. You know, you'd have a communication plan and program.
Change all that management.
Would, right, yeah. Exactly. That would take quarters. So like this is very different. What I can do with Claude and Excel today is different than what I could do with Claude and Excel last month. And it's so different that I'll never go back to using Excel the same way. And so, you know, that could be radically true next month for something else. And so, you know, this evolution is really about finding the people in the company who are comfortable with that dynamism and using them, leveraging their comfort, leveraging their their natural desire most often to evolve with this technology as the culture carriers. We elevate those people, the salespeople, marketing people, product people, whomever it is, who are naturally biased towards this technology, feel comfortable with it, and are consistently learning themselves, and we use them to help everyone else get comfortable. And I think a lot of it has to do with lowering the fear of failure, you know, especially if you're good at what you've done. If you've done it for 10 to 15 years, maybe 20 years, the idea of having to relearn how you think and interact with technology is probably not something you woke up wanting to do. And then now we're going to say, hey, guess what? You might have to do that all the time. And they're like, oh, are you kidding? Like, I have so many other things that I need to do with my day. And so it's finding the people who are actually excited about it, getting them to play with it, and getting them to share what works with their peers and colleagues. That's how transformation and change management, I think, is going to look going forward. I think this idea, and this is why I call the philosophy that business that Howdo shares, this is why I call it business evolution. We've been treating change management as a project. You know, like innovation is 0 to 1. Iteration is 1 to 2, 2 to 3. Transformation is 3 to A, you know, like something totally different. What's going to happen with AI is all of that most of the time, and it's going to be continuous. It's a cycle. And so the most healthy cycle that we can help businesses find is one where they are iterating, they are innovating, they are transforming using AI all the time. And that transformation is producing two things. It's producing growth in revenue and customers, and it's producing savings. It's reducing costs. That growth and savings needs to be reinvested in the two things that are very valuable right now, and that is talent and technology. And so if we can get that positive, virtuous cycle of capital going, where saving money and time equals more talent and technology, then companies are on a very, very positive growth trajectory with AI. To get them there, it's finding the right people, empowering them, and then disseminating that to the organization consistently.
Now, when I think about the word transformation, I jump to digital transformation, often where a big company is trying to build an ERP and to establish some digital way of dealing with things. And it involves a lot of process tied in with technology. Do you mean that plus more?
Yeah, I think yes. And the way there's two sides to transformation. There's the internal side and the external side. Internally, how do we as a team use technology to run our business? Externally, how do we present that to the customer so that they can easily consume what we're selling? And so, you know, a lot of times, for example, you know, where we're seeing the most effective and highest volume AI rollout right now is customer service. That is the most natural thing to be impacted by LLMs. We already had chatbots. And so LLMs are just kind of we're calling chatbots agents. And instead of powering them with, you know, machine learning, we're powering them with LLMs. It's basically the same thing, right? And so like, that is the next natural evolution. And that is in and of itself a transformation. Like to get an LLM into a customer support ecosystem is a technical transformation. It is a process and operational transformation. And it's a transformation in which in the way in which the company interacts with its customer. So, you know, what I always find interesting about these words, innovation, iteration, transformation, is that they're very contextual. If you go to Amazon, they're doing things that most companies can't even imagine right now. Like they're so far ahead. And so what looks like iteration to them would look like transformation to a company that hasn't quite figured out technology yet. And so it's all relative, but it's all pointing at the same destination, which is the companies that use data to automate as many decisions, high consequence decisions as possible, and use data to empower their teams and use data to build very strong relationships with their customers are the ones who will win.
What's your website? Let's make sure that everybody hears it.
It's howdo.com.
Howdo.com. So ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with West Stringfellow at howdo.com. Tell us, how do you engage with potential new clients? Do you do a diagnostic in the beginning and kind of figure out what it is? How does that look for folks?
It depends. And I hate giving a soft answer here, but like it's sometimes it just depends on the opportunity. Generally what we try to do is ask a bunch of questions. Again, everything is very, very contextual. I could go in with a book of here's what works for Amazon and maybe five things work for that company. Right. And so it's really about learning where's your company at? Where are you as a leadership team at? And what I mean by that is, what is your culture capable of achieving today? What are the real capital requirements that you have in your business? How much money can you spend? And what do you need to see that money do? What's your payback period? What's your ROI expectations? And then what's going on? What are the exogenous shocks you're feeling? What's going on internally? What is the dynamic of the team? How is your product performing? How's your technology, your P&L performing? Once we have that information, and that's just simple conversation and maybe some free surveys that we send out to the team, we start to be able to get a really precise understanding of the initial opportunity. And then it's a dialogue around how can we bring this opportunity to life for your company? What would the phasing and sequencing look like? And where is the investment appetite for that type of change?
Excellent. Wes, I hope everyone goes and checks that out. And is there a sweet spot for the type of organization that should, you can deal with startups or really large companies, because you're bringing your experience to bear at working at all these different types of situations, and you can kind of calibrate based upon the needs of who you're talking to, right?
That's right.
Excellent. So everybody check that out. That is howdo.com, speaking with Wes Stringfellow. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.